precious Heavenly Father, we thank you for this time that we're able to be here with you. We thank you for the many wonderful blessings that you have given us. We would praise you at this time and help us with the understanding that we're learning here today, that we might apply to our lives, and that we might be obedient to thy cause. Bless us. Hour we pray in Jesus' name. Amen.
Thank you.
I'm not sure I'm going to need it. I'll speak up. I thought I had
you. Mike, for this. I couldn't hear you that well, and I was sitting right here.
When?
2 minutes ago.
Well, Eric, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay.
Are they recording?
Yes, it's recording now, but that should pick it up from here, correct?
Did you turn it on?
Yes, I turned it on. Put the red lights on. I want to apologize for the last time that I really didn't get this together, wasn't able to like I wanted to, but that's the last apology you're going to get from me this week. Okay? I'd forgotten to put this one in, so this is the phase that everything goes through. And when I took my pictures, I did see the phase of, you know, it was a bright moon, and then it was a quarter, and, you know, it came down more and more, and all of a sudden the red moon, and then, you know, it goes back to the phase again and turns white again. I said full. I don't think it was never a full moon. It starts out kind of as a third, and then goes down to a quarter and an eighth and so on. And I wanted to show that one. I was able, with Levi's help last night, to do a little bit more. And I do thank you for the opportunity to actually do this. I know I'll try to remember not to give this testimony too much tomorrow. But, you know, I didn't intend to go to reunions this summer. And my wife said we were going. And so, you know,
I said I was going.
Yeah, I know. But that means I go too. But the main thing, you don't have to, but
you better.
Those who are husbands,
you know what that means.
How does that work for you? How does that work for you?
Like, you're
not
going to
go. Yeah. And so it gave me, you know, I got refreshed at 70s reunion, and definitely here too, and the opportunity to do things that I hadn't done before. Let me see if I can find my place. Does anyone remember where we stopped?
You were just...
Oh. Okay. What? Well, I don't think I had this one in last night, so I will. I'll redo this part. This is a pretty good little slide about the projection of what... NASA has this particular data, except for the middle one, almost the middle one. As they don't have any data that there was darkness, that was a solar eclipse, and we do. But they do that a little bit better and shows you when things are going to be. Now, I want you to notice that the one coming up is in Tabernacles. It'll be September 27, 28, because they do the Hebrews, and I like the word Hebrew better than Jew. They do, of course, the lunar calendar, but they do the evening as the beginning of the day. And so that's when it's going to be. But that was the first one. There have been seven. And there were things that happened in these eclipses when they were tetrads. Now, once again, we're talking about just a tetrad. We're just talking about the tetrads that fall on the fall and the spring, the feast days. They all have to fall on them. They didn't always fall exactly on the same feast day. This is man's learning. It's not pure God science. We're stretching to try to find out. So I don't want to give you the impression of, I have the answer, listen to me, that's it. God has the answers. But he does give us hints and things about things. Anyway, there were persecutions on the one from 162 to 163. Charlemagne defeats Islam Okay, so that for Christianity is supposed to be a good thing. Rome and the Vatican then were sacked. It's supposed to be a bad thing, I guess. I don't know. Because it was by the Muslims, it wasn't by the Jews. Then Christians were killed, and then the expulsion of the Jews from Spain, that's supposed to be bad. Except many of them did go back to the homeland at that time. That was an interesting thing for me as a Spanish teacher. I had a little more knowledge about it, and that was that when Granada fell, then they finally did give the edict. The Catholic kings, Ferdinand and Isabel, reinstituted Christianity as the dominant power in Spain, and they had an edict of expulsing them from there. They also had an edict that they would not allow Jews to go to the New World. Interestingly enough, history now tells us much of Columbus's exploration was by Jewish money. But we finally get down to, 1948, 1950. Okay, independence was in 48, so, it's not precise. Then the Six-Day War is a little more precise, but there are critics that I've read who said, this happened in May for the independence, and it wasn't until June until, they had the war. I'm sorry, I'm from 40, 49 to 50. I'm going too fast. In the Six-Day War, it's not quite the same date when the Tetrad was seen as to when they actually gained and had the Six-Day War. So we're going to look for preciseness. And then, this one right here is beginning to return. We don't know. We assume that's going to be good. However, there was a treaty just signed with Tehran, with Iran, and Netanyahu has already announced that it is a disaster for Israel. We'll see what they do about it. So another good little, John Hagee did this. He picked up on this. And how many of you know or you've seen John Hagee? He's a good preacher, I think. I've enjoyed some of his books. Certainly he's a rapturist, so, we disagree there. But he's a good preacher, but that's not everything. That's pretty much the same thing, except to repeat again that the sun is assigned to the world and the moon is assigned to Israel. That one's not real good. Oh, I think I left off there. So, yeah, that's where it was. So, fuel on the fire, the prophecy. Yes.
Do you know whether Congress ratified the treaty with Iran?
I think Obama did, and I think it's all we had to have.
No, it does have. Well, yeah, that's probably true, but it hasn't been ratified and it hasn't happened.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sorry, I didn't answer that well, Steve. But,
I knew what you meant.
Yeah. But it should be ratified by the Senate by law, that may be a real difficult time. We'll see. I think Democrats are going to lose some funding. Anyway, Rabbi Judah ben Samuel, born in 1140 and died in 1217, and his name was Judah HaHasid, or Judah the Pious, and he was very revered, and I know you can read this, but he was a revered man, and in the year that he died, in 1217, he had a vision, and he wrote that down, and this is written history. Now, once again, I'm sure critics could say, somebody else wrote that, da-da-da, and all of a sudden people find it. I would be disappointed if I found out this whole thing had been written by someone else recently and, that it never really happened. Because there is internet stuff like that. I was drawn to my attention by the article in the Beacon by brother who used to be a president of our conference.
Ron Ball?
No, before Rob.
Ben Horn?
No.
Marlon.
Marlon, yes. Yeah. Marlon, and I read his article, and I said, I'll check that out. So I went to the internet, and I checked it out, and sure enough, everything that Marlon had written was right there on this internet site about Rabbi Ben Samuel. You can to him, and I'm willing to share this. I just haven't shared it yet with you exchange emails, and I will send this to you. I hate to send it out until I've got a little more perfected. It's a lot better since last night than what it was, so I'm feeling better about it. If I can get it even, it'll never be perfect, but if I can get it in a form I'm satisfied with, then you can have it and use it for what you wish. Anyway, he was referred to as the Light of Israel, very, very revered, and he had correspondence with people and Jews, you know, because he was a Jew, and he had that with the Jews that were living in Jerusalem already. And they were under the control, though, of Arabic peoples, and it was Saladin the Great. And this particular point, it was Saladin. It was Arabic peoples who controlled Jerusalem, and they still feel like we've been here longer than the Jews, so they don't like to consider the 2,000 years prior to that. Anyway, at the year of his death, he received a visit from Prophet Elijah, and he said, and this is Elijah, who will precede the Messiah, appeared to me and revealed many things to me and emphasized a precondition for answered prayers, that it is fueled by enthusiasm and joy for the greatness and holiness of God. This is what Rabbi Ben Samuel wrote. He said, Rabbi Ben Samuel said that Elijah appeared to him and he gave him these words that and emphasized that, you know, that the answered prayer is always fueled by the enthusiasm, the joy, and the greatness and the holiness of God. And that was an interesting thought for me.
Your name's not Israel. You have 27.
Oh, you're right. Okay. And I can't change it in here.
That's all right.
You've been a long time.
Yeah, you have. So it's 12:17. 12:17. Okay, it was 1:30 in the morning. No, actually, that part I did today. But so when the Ottomans, now the Ottomans were Turks, and they were already a power at this time to be reckoned with in the Bosphorus area, but they hadn't conquered all of the Middle Eastern world, or a good portion of it, which they finally did. He said, when the Ottomans conquered Jerusalem, so he's predicting this, has not happened. Won't happen for 300 years after his death. When they ruled Jerusalem for 8 jubilees, afterwards Jerusalem became a no man's land for 1 jubilee, and then the 9th jubilee once again come back to possession of the Jewish nation. I don't know about the quote-unquote Jewish nation, but I guess, you know, they did talk more about being Jews at that time. And they didn't talk so much about the house of Israel or Israel per se. I didn't like the wording, but that's what's written in the information I have. So we'll take it at face value at present time. An interesting sidelight was that probably unknown to him that until 1215, they didn't even use the word Ottomans. It wasn't even known as a word. And it was they were a truly Turkish tribe that rolled around Anatolia. Ruled by the son of Ertugrul, his name was Osman, and the name was corrupted by the Europeans to say Ottoman instead of Osman. The same thing happens with Pez. How do you say that word? P-E-R-E-Z?
Perez.
Yeah, Perez. It's not Perez. It's in the Bible, too. That's an important name in the Bible. And look it up in Strong's and see what the meaning is. It has a very interesting meaning. And it's connected to Faraz and the scarlet thread and the twins, okay? So, but I have my adopted grandchildren are Pettis, and we've established a restaurant in Pettis County in Sedalia. You don't know how many times that I've said, I'm here on behalf, I'm trying to get paperwork done for the Pettis family. How do you spell that? P-E-T-T-I-S? No, P-E-R-E-Z. Oh, Perez! No, but go ahead, people. So it bothers a Spanish teacher. So anyway, this is a little drawing of Rabbi Ben Samuel. There will be 8 jubilees, 50 years each, during which the city of Jerusalem will be ruled. Okay, so when did that happen? I'll tell you when it happened. It happened in 1517, and that's the year that the Jews were driven out of Spain. That's the year... 1492 Granada fell, and it took about that much time. And 1493 they put the edict out, but like 1517, that's when they finally drove them out for good. And the Christians took over Spain. So we're going to count 8 jubilees, 50 years each, 400 years. Bring this to 1917. Anybody know what happened, was going on in 1917?
World War One.
Some other countries were involved in that. Afterwards, Jerusalem became no man's land. At Hanukkah, the Festival of Lights, 1917, General Edmund Allenby came into the city of Jerusalem. He actually got near the city of Jerusalem. He stopped about 20 miles. And he sent a telegram to the king and said, "I will not fire on God's city." The king wrote back a telegram and said, "Pray." That was King George V. He said, "Pray." And Allenby did. And the Arabs left. Into the city. That's like those stories of the face in the sky during, you know, the 1948 independence war for Israel. It's like all of those stories that we've heard and it happens. And that's why there was a comment made earlier about, I think Eric made, I'm not sure, but he said that when they studied military battles, that the military teacher never used Israel as an example. They use all of the countries, battles, and generals, plans, and things in history. But don't use Israel because there ain't no plan. It's God's. And
I guess it's probably Jim, wasn't
he? Oh, maybe it was. Is it Jim that said that?
I think so.
Okay. He's not owning up to it. Anyway, this is a picture of Allenby coming in there that day. That's why I like the PowerPoint. Oh, I'm doing the same thing. I'm sorry. Somebody did this current slide. Sorry about that. I forgot.
Line it up a little bit.
Do what?
Line it up.
Line it up.
There you go.
Okay. So the last part says that in the 10th Jubilee, Israel will rule in the city of Jerusalem for one Jubilee, which will signify the beginning of the Messianic end time. Sorry. So we go to the 67 war. So 1917 plus a Jubilee, 50 years, 1967. And they launched the attack. In the last 6 days, yes.
What was the no man's land?
It's Jerusalem. Jerusalem is a no man's land. I'm sorry. Thank you, Betty. Okay, sorry. Yeah, you're right. I'm concerned I won't get finished, and so I was hurrying, so thank you. When the British took over Israel, they did not own it. They said it was a British mandate. They were controlling it for those people. Quite frankly, the British in general, partially because of the influence of a guy who didn't star in the movie, but was the source of the movie. Remember that one? He was a friend of the Arabs, and he wrote in Lawrence of Arabia. Of his influence in England was so strong that basically the English thought they were saving Israel for the Arabs. They were just keeping things in control during the war until, you know, the Arabs could really take over. The problem was the Jews kept coming in, and they came in World War One. They came in after World War One. The Zionist movement grew. That was already established in Israel prior to 1948. That was a late thing. It wasn't until after World War II then that the great influx was so heavy that that's when the British lost the control. There were too many that came in who were Jewish, and they couldn't. They were trying to save it for the Arabs. Their allies were the Arabs. And don't forget, they were in Egypt. They were all throughout the Middle East with the Arab incumbents, and their alliances were with them.
In the mid-40s, mid and late-40s, the British were rather beholding to a particular country on this continent.
Yes.
The United States.
Yeah.
There was a president here who was working very hard to get it established.
And he did. He signed the paper. And of course, we like the significance. I think most of you know that well, a lot of that significance was that, you know, it was the deciding vote when Harry Truman gave him the vote to make Israel a state. It was down to the wire, and there was a rabbi from New York City who came and visited Harry Truman and talked to him before that vote. I don't know. I don't remember all the details on that. I have to ask my son. Well, anyway.
I heard they all think they brought it to his house there in Independence.
I think you're right.
In the New Jerusalem.
Yeah, I think you're right. And. So we had to be thankful for Harry. The buck stopped there. I know there's an awful lot I still want to tell you, but we're short on time, and there's still a lot. But the main thing is, then in 67, so there's a jubilee where it's a no man's land. We don't really own it. Nobody owns it. The Jews don't. The Arabs don't. The British really don't. They're just keeping the peace. So in 67, with all those threats from Egypt, then they launched the attack, and we know about the Six-Day War for the most part. It was interesting to me that King Hussein, who was a U.S. ally, good guy, and I remember that as a child. King Hussein was a wonderful man, and he married an American woman, you know, but he actually tried to fool the Israelis. Because he was going to attack Israel, but the Israeli army actually had a whole battalion that came in to it was a city right on the border of Jordan, and as they came in, the Jordanians were yelling, hey, come on! They were clapping for them and everything. They didn't realize it was the Jews. They came in, took over the city. You know, those are just strange things. There has to be some other hand in that.
There's a video series that I think Frank Fry has available. It's called Against All Odds.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, or is that what it's called? Anyway.
That's a movie title I've heard of, but it's a football.
It's a series of TV shows, and it talks about the different ways that God's hand preserved Israel in different wars, more specifically since 1948.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really awesome. Just the, we could call them coincidences of things that happened. And it's just like the apparition over Israel in 1948.
Mm-hmm.
That
would be a companion class to this kind of thing. Anyway, the last part, of course, is that the House of Israel will rule for one jubilee, 50 years. 67 to what? 2017. So, there it is in the chart. And it just lays out. It took 300 years for the prophecy to begin. One thing I'm telling you is that this is based upon, and this is what we have to be careful of, and that's why I'm telling you I think it is, these people think it is, makes sense to me, but I can't definitively prove to you that this all started in 1517, and it's all based upon saying that it started in 1517. If 1517 is the wrong date, then the numbers are off. But at least it gives us a broad picture of there's some timelines, there are some blocks, there are some things. May not know the hour, may not know the day, we might know the year, we might know the period when it's going to happen. And that's, of course, with other signs. Jubilees, of course, supposed to be 50 years, and everything in the Jubilee year is restored to the original owners. Given back. I know many of you probably read the Shemitah by Jonathan Kahn, and you know Jonathan has his own manner of determining when the Shemitah year is. The reason I don't say too much about, I mean, the reason we can't definitively define the dates on these is that the Jews have stopped doing that because they didn't have a temple, So you ask a Jew, when's the Jubilee year? Oh, yeah. Okay. Sabbatical calendar. This is an interesting little sidelight. Maybe it's not a side. This article, this particular site, was saying that there's a sabbatical messianic cycle in 2009-2017. I really don't know what that means. I'm going to find out. So that's why I say this isn't really finished. 2009 was 5773 on the Hebrew calendar. And I'm trying to look and see what was happening then. And there was something with that. There was supposed to be a peace accord in 2013. Does anybody know historically if there was some peace accord in the Middle East? Because there are lots of prophetic pronouncements about there will be that in Daniel, the 3.5 years. After 3.5 years, there will be a treaty signed for 3.5 years, and then Israel will be betrayed. Well, folks.
How many peace agreements, though?
We had so many, and that's why I said I don't have the details on that. But we have one now that they're working on. Maybe that will go into the equation. What was interesting is 2016 becomes 577, then that would be the beginning of that sabbatical year. So, who knows? These are my pictures.
Have about 8 minutes.
Okay, these are my pictures, and
you can take a little extra.
But we'll see. Some of these I've just left in here. You can see that different people have done different things. This is again a listing of the bad things that happened, the good things that happened. It's just another chart. So lots of people have done lots of interesting things with it. Also, I think most of you know that there's a religious new year in the Hebrew calendar, and there's a secular year. And the secular year starts in the fall feast, and then the religious one starts in the spring. There's just some of mine. That's kind of how it looked. It looked pretty much like this, and then I enlarged it and brought it forward. So it was fun to get. Brother Magnesi was with me, and he was staying with us when I got those pictures. But I haven't had any since. And I probably won't have one, for this next one. Because this is where it's supposed to be seen this year. And you can see that it's mostly on the Atlantic Ocean, but there's enough in there that it will be seen in Israel. There are those who say, man, does it count? Because by the time that happens, the sun's coming up, and it really doesn't matter. Okay, it's good enough for me right now. It gives me some hope. That's another chart showing how the alignment will be so that it will give you the blood moon effect. And there will be a solar eclipse on the 13th, which is Rosh Hashanah, and that will be a partial solar eclipse. Okay, that will precede it. Another nice little chart about showing, how they do, and they use the menorah to show that. But they don't give all of these. You notice they only do 3 of the tetrads. And I think it's important to know that we had 7, including the one from the crucifixion. And now we're into 8. And 8's the new beginning. Maybe it's the new beginning. This is another one which is kind of interesting, just to show the precise dates when things will happen, and where they have the 1st century and the 21st century. When you get this information, then you can look at it, and maybe you can make some more sense out of it, even more than I have done. That's somebody else's picture, but I thought it was kind of neat. That's a good little chart. That's a simplistic view of it. And there's a more complicated one. Would you like to explain that one to me? A chance to do so. I didn't understand it. But at the bottom it says, no other tetrad in history since 3000 BC has displayed this kind of symmetry. So those who really do, there are people who really look into this, and they have the scientific knowledge and knowledge of astronomy to be able to say, why do you do this, you do this, you do this. But you know what? they could be right. There could be some symmetry there that they're actually finding, and that we should look at it and say, and you know, if I use the scripture Isaiah 40:18, to whom then we liken God, because God is symmetrical and perfect, and this was trying to show. That was a fairly good chart, but it again, it's kind of difficult. I want to show this one to my wife. Sandy, I want you to look at 2015 and tell me when Tish B'Av is.
We're just looking at it. July 26th, 27th.
It's over. Yes. Oh, no, no.
No, it's coming. Your anniversary's going to
You're
be
right.
9th of August.
Okay.
Oh. We better be careful.
Doesn't mean I'm supposed to go into mourning on my anniversary? You brought it up, I didn't. That'd be terrible about your anniversary dinner. You sit at the table and cry together. Trouble is, Neil Simmons and Frank and I would enjoy going to a restaurant and doing just that, watching people's expressions. But I don't understand all those dates. I can't calculate all of those things. I'm just giving them, scratching the surface for you to show you there's a lot there. And some people have done a lot of research. This one's interesting, but there again, they go back to the Spanish Inquisition and the expulsion of the Jews from Spain. It's a well done chart. It's not the last one. It's the same thing as what happened in Y2K. We prepared for the end of the world.
Because of a glitch in a computer.
Yeah. And then, the Mayan calendar's going to end. They're marking cycles. And if life is really eternal, it's still just another cycle. But that doesn't mean there won't be something that happens that cycle. And the Mayan calendar said there would be something that would happen in that cycle. We may, in a couple of years, say, do you realize what really happened in 2012? That was it. We didn't see it. Was it. I'll give you a good question. Those who are old enough to remember, I think it was Aldous Huxley who wrote a book, 1984. You remember that one? Big Brother? Come down and control. Did it happen?
Yes.
Yeah. In the church. Yeah. And I didn't think about that until after all that happened. How did Aldous Huxley, I think that was the author, is on the right one? Yeah. How did he know about it? The church. I don't know. I know, dear. But the one I want to stress with you too is that sometimes, and there was one in here, and I don't know which chart it was because we're going fast. But they actually said something in a chart here that applies, and they stated exactly what we said. Oh, we talked about Jesus going down into hell. You know, restoration theology from other people. Okay, and I didn't get that in there. So, I got in the wrong place. We have 2014, 15, blood moons, 2016, blank. 2017, the Messiah returns. What's going to happen in 2016?
Seal for hope.
Yeah. That's what Verniel said. Verniel said, I know what's going to happen. It's in 2016 the plagues come.
You might want to talk about Verniel. She was given the prophecy to herself that she would be alive when the seal portion was given. And she died last August. And John Davies had the testimony that he had seen her. He'd seen an older woman. I can't put it all together, but she was eating lunch. A messenger came to her and gave her the choice. Did she want to go now or stay? And she thought about it and said, I'm going. Yeah. And she put her dish down went into bed and lay down and went to meet her master. And that was very special to me because I guess with knowing Verniel's passion and that she was gone, kind of shook my
inner core.
Yes, for a long time, and I cried and cried and cried and cried and cried and thought, how can the Lord do this to me? And yet, she made that choice herself, and that cleared it up for me.
Yeah, she always told us that Wayne told her she was required to stay. It wasn't her choice. She was required by him.
We do believe it.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I'd like to give maybe a little addition to that. I don't want to say a name, but one of the brethren in the branch had an experience and told Verniel that. Verniel had only been spoken to twice in her life, that time and by Wayne. They were both exactly the same thing. She would live to see the coming forth of the sealed portion. That was it. I'd like to mention another set of plates that I think is more significant. The sealed portion is going to be to the church. There's another set of plates that is more significant to the world, and that's the brass plates, because they will confirm the inspired translation. They are written in Egyptian, and they're going to prove the account of the Book of Mormon. It's going to be an undeniable witness that's going to come to the world about the latter-day work, the work of the prophet Joseph Smith Jr., both the inspired translation and the Book of Mormon. And so that's going to be, the sealed portion is, that's in particular to us in the faith. But this is a work that's going to have such far-reaching ramifications to those who have doubted the latter-day work. It's just going to be an amazing event.
And about 1 o'clock in the morning, as Levi and I were talking about it, and I meant to ask Levi to share this, but we had thoughts about how in the world is this going to happen in 1 year? Basically, I mean, you know, we're halfway through this one. If we have a fall feast, and if the economic crash occurs in the fall, as many are predicting, then everything breaks loose, and you're going to have waste places in Zion, and they destroy Independence, and you've got to, you know, and that's a waste place. And only have 1 year to build the kingdom. And what did you say, Levi? What did we say?
Well, stuff doesn't take that long, and working with God, that doesn't happen. But if you look back in the days of Enoch, and I did look that up, he was able to establish.
You want to take the mic?
Not really.
Then you'll have to speak up.
He was able to establish Zion very quickly, and then the days of Zion were 365 years on the earth, so they were translated. And then go into the Book of Mormon times when Jesus came over, and all this stuff that happened, and earth swallowed up the less of the righteous, as they say, the more righteous of the people were able to survive. When Christ came, and when Christ left and ascended back into the heavens, what they have for however many so many years, they're at peace. So things can happen very drastically. We also talked about raising up people that would do it. So if we aren't going to be the ones to do it, it doesn't mean that he hasn't already gotten other people already preparing to come and join us in the work. And then if we fail, they're just going to take over and do it. It's not going to take a lot of time for them to prepare another people.
Book of Mormon people found other people. Sandy?
Doug Patterson has stated that he thinks it will happen exactly as it did in the Book of Mormon. There will be this earthquake, the darkness for 3 days, and then, so that would obviously be very quick.
And God doesn't recognize time.
No, no, and he can do what he wants to do. So our focus, we have to be careful about our focus, and the images and signs are not the focus. It's Christ and his Father in that ministry. And I said I put them real blue. Now I'm realizing that I left off.
But you're definitely in Eric's time now.
Yeah.
Poor Eric. Poor Eric.
Somehow this is not in here, and I know that it was. I'll just share this and then I'll end it, because it ties in with exactly what Levi said. I believe a prophecy has been given, and it was that in the last spring conference that it was impressed upon Neil's mind, and I had this written in, I thought it's supposed to be in there, I don't know what happened. And basically the prophecy was that the impression of the Spirit was that, my children, do you not realize that in the death camps in Germany, that the Jews in, I forget which camp, I want to say it was Auschwitz, but I don't know, they said they would forgive their captors and they would focus on asking the Lord to restore the house of Israel. That was 1945. How long did it take for the Lord to do it?
3 years.
Neil gave that in 2014. 2017. It's not prophecy to the church, because if you don't have
I do have that on my computer.
Yeah, and I do too. Okay. It's supposed to be in the presentation. And, you know, it fits the 3 year, it fits 2017. A lot of the pieces, remember I showed you the thing about the pieces of the puzzle? You keep putting this one together and this one again, and all of a sudden you get the picture. So I hope we're getting some of the picture. It's not totally in focus. But I hope it would give us hope then to go forward and tell people, look, the time, I think, is very near. We don't have the church to adopt that and say it's prophetic. Yeah. To me, what Neil said is prophetic. Not everything Neil says is prophetic. He's told me other things I know. Yes, yes. And, you know, otherwise, he stood up at my wedding with me and we've been very close for many years, but he's a human being. But I'm looking, I look at the prophecy. I look at what is said, not at the person. And what is said makes sense. It fits everything that we've been talking about. It fits what Levi just said. So it could be done within a very short frame of time. And it's pretty good, we're part of it. So I think I can end with that. Well, Eric's going
to end. Could you go back to the statement that Rabbi Judah ben Samuel said was right after he was known as the Light of Israel? Because there was something in there that I thought was very... keep going.
No, you're too far.
Oh, yeah.
You're right there.
Yeah, you're right. Because that was...
No, nope, it's farther.
Yeah, it's further than that.
All right, next one. Right there. Because I think that... For me, I want to write that down, that the precondition for answered prayer is that it is fueled by enthusiasm and joy for the greatness and holiness of God. And I think, for me, that is a very profound statement. And I want to write that down.
Okay, I'll leave that up then. And it is, and that's what we all look forward to. And we are, that's what was restored in the restoration, was the belief that there's an active God in our lives who creates miracles, heals, sends visions and dreams, and we may not have all had the same ones, or some don't get them much at all. I'm one of those. But we had a little girl this morning that got it. And that's what we live for.
Since you brought Neil up in that experience,
yes.
I'd like to read to you the line of his message last night. He said, talking about how God measures love, here's one indicator. If we're going to be like me, that is God, you have to forgive. The key for your own forgiveness lies in your own hands. When you forgive, It unlocks the Lord's forgiveness for you. And that's what they learn in the death camps.
Right. In the death camps, they learn to forgive. They learn that the only thing they could do was ask the Lord to forgive their captors. And by doing that, as Jim says, then that unleashed that power that God could act for them. And he did. For 3 years. That was one of the most amazing. Now, there were Jews there already, but the majority of them that came in were either there in Russia or in Germany. And they didn't get out until 45. I have a friend from England who entered the camps. He went into Buchenwald, and they motioned for the people to come out, and they would not come out. And he said from then on he hated Germans with a passion that you could not even fathom. He did not believe God created a decent German in the entire world. He hated every one of them until he went to a square dancing club with some. And he learned that not all were the same. But I appreciate that, Brother Jim, because that's true. That was their keys. Doug Patterson would tell you about keys. You have a key, and you use the key that God gives you, and then unlocks the lock. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate all the input.
Thank you.
I feel something I found interesting was where I watched that last blood moon. It wasn't very red to me.
No.
The last blood moon. But what was interesting was when the sun came up over the horizon and was up over for a few, it was. Where I was, it was just weird.
It's seen in different places, and we're not the only people who are supposed to see it. It's not just for us.
No.